Well, dear students, we are going to embark upon a quick presentation on the different types of accounts. Why? Because you got to put your money somewhere. We discuss these issues, these topics, also in Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management. But it's important to make sure that you are at least aware of the different types of accounts, because there's always a little bit of confusion when it comes to the different types of accounts. And one of the things, when and if you ever become a financial professional, that they tell you over and over again is that you are not allowed, it is prohibited from giving people advice on what type of account they should have. Even though it's common knowledge that most people are going to have a regular account for money that they're not going to have very much long term, and maybe a 401k, a Roth IRA, and the like for long-term retirement. But we're supposed to always tell them to consult their tax professional or legal authority when it comes to the type of account. So it gets a little silly, but that, you know, that's the rule, and you got to follow the rule or lose your license. So let's start on slide number 2. Now, have you noticed I'm not very graphical? This is an attempt by me, yours truly, to show you the two different types of accounts. There are a few others, but the main types are taxable, sometimes called a regular account, and what the IRS calls qualified, tax qualified. Sometimes they'll call the taxable accounts non-qualified. In other words, if you have a regular taxable account, every year you're going to have to pay taxes on whatever dividends or interest or capital gains, or if it's a real estate investment, there'll be rent. Yes, I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? But there are types of accounts with the which the IRS calls tax-qualified accounts, of which the most popular, of course, is the retirement account. But there are educational savings accounts and health savings accounts, and these all have some kind of benefit with regard to taxes. So this is not set up by the IRS. The IRS has to execute it. They have to put it into practice, but it comes from the Congress. Congress makes the laws regarding taxes, and so they're the ones who are ultimately responsible. And so what the Congress did is said, look, we want to make it easy, advantageous. We want to give people incentives to save for their retirement, because we as Americans are not usually very good at it. Other cultures are. Interestingly enough, the cultures that tend to be the best savers are cultures whose language has a very distinct characteristic that most other languages don't. Most languages distinguish between the present tense and the future tense. Future tense. I am going to the store. I will go to the store. The present and the future. But some languages don't distinguish between present and future. They're the same. And it turns out that those cultures, those languages, have a tendency to save a whole lot more for the future, because when the present is the future, yeah, I thought that was really interesting. So what do? They say, look, if you put your money in a regular taxable account, and this is the default if you go down to the bank or if you open up a brokerage firm, they're going to assume you're going to do a taxable account unless you ask otherwise. Every year, we're going to ask you to pay taxes. But we're going to put no limits on your contribution and no limits on your investment types. And so this is supposed to look like a bucket, and these are all the different options that we can put in the bucket, all the different investment alternatives. And there's no limit, right? Mutual funds, stocks, bonds, cash, the ones we've been discussing, real estate, the scary stuff, options, futures, shorting, buying on margin. Those all can go into a regular taxable account. No limit on the contributions every year. You have $1 million, put it in. No limits on the investment types, no matter what. If you want to lose your money, I mean, if you want to be speculative with options and futures, go right ahead. and you're going to get a 1099 form at the end of the year or at the beginning of the next year and pay taxes. Whereas over here, these qualified accounts, we're going to, the Congress saying this, we're going to limit the amount of contributions you can make in any one year, because we don't want you putting $1 million or $2 million or whatever dollars into this tax qualified account. And we're also going to put limits on the investment types. Notice the Congress, in their infinite wisdom, says that stocks, bonds, cash, mutual funds, those are risky enough. Well, not cash and not bonds, but stocks, yeah. Bonds sometimes are risky, right? Actually, there's a way for you to put real estate in a tax-qualified account, but I'm not even going to tell you about it because it's very dangerous. Don't do it. And there actually is a way for you to put gold coins. I don't know how you do it. I've never done it. I know you have to find a trustee who will hold the coins on your behalf, but don't do it. Don't buy gold. I mean, if you want to buy some gold, but it's not a good long-term investment. Okay? So just think of these two different account types as different buckets, and the investments are what you put in the buckets. People will say, well, what kind of return can I get from a Roth IRA? And it's the wrong question. What kind of return can you get from the investments inside your Roth IRA? Well, that depends on which investment options you choose, which alternatives you choose, right? Therein lies the confusion many people have. So let's now start to break up the retirement accounts, because those are varied. There are many out there, but they come into basically two different categories, although there's a third one we'll take a look at later on: pre-tax and post-tax, sometimes called before-tax, pre-tax, and sometimes post-tax is called after-tax. And basically, the difference is where you get your tax break. With the pre-tax contributions, 401ks, 403bs, the traditional IRA, which used to be just called the IRA, but now it's called the traditional to separate it, differentiate it from the Roth IRA, simple IRA, SEP IRA, the KEO, you get a tax break now. You get to deduct the contributions from your income tax, and then you pay taxes in retirement when you take it out, which makes sense because normally in retirement, you're in a lower tax bracket, right? So you get the tax break while you're working and then pay taxes when you retire. Now, come around 1998 or so, a gentleman by the name of William Roth was a senator in the Senate, where senators are in the Senate, from Delaware, I think. And he decided, he was really angry. And I'll tell you why Mr. Senator Roth was angry. He was in the Senate in his 70s and was being required to take money out of his IRA, his 401k and the like, even though he was still working. He was a senator and he didn't like that. So he wanted to come up with a way to have retirement accounts that you would not have to take those required minimum distributions. And he wanted you to pay the taxes up front and then not have to pay taxes when you are taking the money out, because he was in a higher tax bracket, right? Because he was still working. So he sponsored, and that's it still. And the reason I tell you that is because that's where the name comes from, Roth, William Roth. That was his name. He came up with the idea of a Roth IRA, and then eventually they moved it over to the 401ks, 403bs. But they're really not called Roth 401ks, 403bs. That we put quotes around them because the IRS doesn't call them that. They just call them a 401k with post-tax contributions. And the cool thing about this is that you don't get a tax break now, but you get an enormous tax break later. All the money you put in, well, that's already been taxed, is tax-free. But all the earnings you made is tax-free. All the earnings you made are tax-free. Very, very cool. I'm a big fan of the Roth IRA. So let's continue here. So we got the idea. Write that down. Pre-tax versus post-tax. So, come on, sweetheart. Go to the next slide. What's going on here? It's stuck. There it goes. The IRA, the individual retirement arrangement, folks, that's the real name. No one is going to call it that except for the IRS. But the real name is the individual retirement arrangement. Everybody else calls it the individual retirement account. but the legal term is individual retirement arrangement. It is the most popular personal retirement plan, and as we said, it is now referred to as the traditional IRA to differentiate it between from the Roth IRA. Anyone with earned income can contribute to a Roth IRA. Now, there's some confusion, as we'll see, because there are different provisions for the Roth and the traditional, but anyone, it doesn't matter how much money you make, there's no limitation on how much money you make. You can put money in an individual retirement arrangement. Now, if you have a 401k or other employer-sponsored plan at work, and you make over a certain amount of money, which is a pretty generous amount, then you may still contribute, but you just might not be able to deduct it from your taxes. And if that's the case, if you have a 401k at work or 403b at work, my advice is to put the money in a Roth IRA, because that's going to give you a better return after tax in the long run, as opposed to keeping some of your money in the traditional IRA pre-tax and some of it post-tax. Plus, it creates a bit of an accounting, not nightmare, but it's a pain in the neck. You have to keep track of how much was not deductible and how much was deductible. Ugh, it's a pain in the neck. So I tell people, hey, do the Roth. And then they say, well, I make too much money. No, you don't. We'll see. There's a limitation on the Roth contributions, but there's a way to get around it. It's our tax code. So remember, anybody with income can contribute to a traditional IRA. Normally, the money is tax deductible, pre-tax, sometimes not. And the contributions limits do increase as inflation goes along. The money grows tax deferred, and once you're in retirement, which is typically not 59 and a half years of age or older, but there are other exceptions, then you start taking the money out. You must start taking it out at 70 and a half. And this is where Mr. Roth was angry. Remember I told you about him, Senator Roth? Required minimum distributions. And they every once in a while they get in the news and the people scream and holler, I'm still working in my 70s. I don't want to be taking this money out. And they're going to have to raise the age. I mean, there's something along the lines for the next 2 years or something with the all the turmoil and the stopgap legislations to help people during the turmoil of 2020. But still, it's still eventually they want you to start taking the money out. And I think, I'm not sure why. I guess they just want to get paid, or they don't want people to hang on to it and, oh, I want to leave it for my kids. No, you spend it. I sometimes find people who don't want to spend their nest egg. Do it. This is, you know, you only get, it's not a dress rehearsal. You only get one life. So, but that's their decision. It's their money. And then the IRS has many, many, many cousins, right? 401ks, 403bs, 457s, 401as. These are either corporations and other businesses, 401ks, or public organizations. At Southwestern, we have a 403b and a 457. The SEP IRA for small businesses, the simple IRA for small businesses, the solo 401k for people only have their business. They only have one employee themselves. And then the SAR-SEP, which is kind of gone now. I think they got rid of it. But if you have one, you get to keep it. And then my favorite is the KEO. Not because it's actually that great. I just love the name. KEO. Reminds me of the Wizard of Oz. You know, at the end where they're in the castle and you hear the guards going, yo, KEO, KEO. Well, that's... It sometimes amazes me where my mind goes when I... And then, of course, starting around 1998... the Roth IRA, post-tax contributions, and they've moved it to the 401ks and the 403bs. They all work very much like the traditional IRA, except for the Roth versions, where you get the tax break later. Okay, now, so let's take an example here. Here's a 401k, a 403b, maybe your traditional IRA. You contribute via your paycheck. Well, not if it's a traditional IRA, but let's say it's a 401k. They take $100 out of your paycheck. Now, here's where the feds in the state of California are going to be washing your back here. Because it depends on which tax bracket you're in. And this is why it's so important for people to understand their marginal tax rate. Even though most people don't, we hammer it into them in Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management. So let's say you're in the 25% tax bracket, which probably means you're in the 6-8% California bracket. Maybe there are more brackets in California. So let's say 8%. So that means the feds are going to give you $25 and the state of California is going to give you $8. Well, no, they don't actually write a check. But what they do is they take 25 fewer dollars out of your paycheck to send to the IRS and eight fewer dollars out of your paycheck to send to the state of California. So essentially, you're getting a subsidy of $33. Your take-home pay then is only reduced by $67. So you see the whole $100 go into your account, but you see your take-home pay only reduced by $67. Now, if you're in a lower tax bracket, it'll be less of an advantage. If you're in a higher tax bracket, it'll be more. Cool. And we didn't even discuss the possible, but not mandatory, match that many employers will give you. You put in $100, they'll put in $50 or $100. Whoa! A 50%, 100% return on your investment in one day? Who's going to do that? Well, your employer will. And here's why. They want you to go away when you retire. It used to be that companies would put money away. Sometimes you'd contribute, sometimes you didn't, on your behalf. And then when you retired after 30, 40 years and got your gold watch and a handshake, they would then pay you a certain amount of money for the rest of your life. That was called the traditional defined benefit pension plan. But those things are disappearing and they're almost all gone. Now we've substituted them with the 401ks, the 403bs, which are called defined contribution plans. And the reality is, dear students, if you invest wisely, prudently, consistently, with an eye toward long-term growth, don't get too greedy. I think you've heard me say this before. Don't get too greedy when the markets zoom ahead. Don't panic, especially don't panic when the markets fall. You have the opportunity to do a whole lot better than any defined benefit plan would ever do for you. Right. And on the other hand, if you don't contribute or you get really panicky when the markets fall or real greedy when the markets zoom ahead, you have the opportunity to royally screw up. So the onus is on you, right? It's on your shoulders now. And if you do what we do, if you follow the concepts that we've outlined in this class, and the world doesn't end, I think you're going to do pretty darn well, dear students. That's my hope and desire for you. Okay, so you put this $100 in, and you get $67 taken out of your paycheck, and maybe you get $150 in your account. What's the catch, right? There's always a catch. Well, yeah, this money you're thinking of it for long term. You're not going to touch it for 30, 40 years, right? You kiss it, send it on its way, and it comes back to you in retirement. And then you pay income taxes on any amounts withdrawn in retirement. But people in retirement are usually in a lower tax bracket. You see the methodology here? If you're in a higher tax bracket, like dear Senator William Roth, congratulations. I don't feel sorry for you. In fact, I'm very happy that you're in a higher tax bracket in retirement. It's a champagne problem. Oh, dear, we have so much champagne. What shall we ever do? I certainly hope you all have that problem in your golden years. I certainly want to have that problem in my golden years. Plus, as we said, you send this money on its way and you don't come back for it for 30 years. If you withdraw the money before retirement, they're going to pay the income tax. Well, that makes sense. You didn't pay income tax on the way in. Plus, you have to pay normally a 10% penalty. There are some exceptions. During the turmoil of 2020, there's a way, I haven't looked into it as much as I should, but I don't want to because it sounds like a nightmare. You can withdraw the money and then you have 3 years to pay it back without having to pay the taxes and the penalty. But if you don't pay it back, so think of it as just money that you're not going to touch for a long time. Now, there are first-time home purchase, very cool, right? Because you can't live in your mutual fund in your 401k or your Roth IRA. Well, you can't yes, you can pull it out of the Roth IRA, but 401k, 403b, you can often borrow it from yourself, which is very cool. So there are some exceptions. You can get the money, but you don't normally want to. You want to, ideally, you want to leave it in there and let it grow. Okay, now let's take a look at the Roth option, the Roth IRA, the 401k, the Roth 401k as it's called, even though the IRS doesn't call it that. They just call it a 401k with after-tax, post-tax contributions. So you contribute $100 into your Roth IRA, your checking account, or maybe a Roth 401k through your paycheck. What does the federal IRS, what does the IRS give you? Nada. What does the state of California give you? Nada. So you get a total government subsidy of nada. And your disposable income is reduced by $100. So you say, well, why do I want to contribute to a Roth IRA, Frank? I can get a tax break now if I contribute to the traditional IRA. Oh, dear students, here's the answer. And this is what you're going to tell people. If they ever, why are you contributing to a Roth IRA? And here's the answer. Because a Roth IRA is so cool. Oh, yeah, it's tax-free in retirement is a golden opportunity. When you compare apples to apples, which is not always the case, no other investment choice comes close on an after-tax basis, in my humble opinion. Now, there are some scenarios where, sure, it would have made sense for you to do the traditional IRA or whatever, but still, you know, we're not allowed to say this as financial professionals because every person's different. You have to know your client and recommend that which is suitable and appropriate. But everybody should have a Roth IRA. We're not allowed to say that. But anyway, I think they're going to get rid of them or limit them. Maybe not. We'll see. If you have one, you get to keep it. But because there's going to be hundreds of billions of dollars that the feds can't get their hands on, right? Can't tax. And some people say, well, you know what? Don't trust them. Don't believe them. In 20 years, they might change the rules. Yeah, they might change the rules, but old people vote and old people have canes. And here's another cool thing about the Roth IRA. You can withdraw the contributions at any time with no penalty. Well, that makes sense, right? You've already paid taxes on the contributions, not the earnings. You have to pay there are taxes on the earnings and the 10% penalty if you take it out before 59 and a half. And this also makes the Roth IRA an excellent intermediate term investment account. Purchase of a home, other high ticket item, great for college expenses. Why? Because currently, as the financial aid laws are, they don't care what's in your Roth IRA. If you have an educational savings account, oh yeah, they want to know what's in that. Or a Universal Trust, a Minors Act, an account in the name of the minor, the young person. Yes, because they want you to use that for education, but they don't for the Roth IRA. So when some folks who are, you know, not in the highest tax brackets, nice way of saying they're like us, middle class, when they say, I want to start an educational savings account for my son or my daughter, I say, do you have a Roth IRA? And they say, no. I say, put the money there first. Put the money in the Roth IRA first, then you get a better chance of getting some financial aid. You can always take it out. You can always take the contributions out. Cool? Yeah, I think so. The Roth IRA is so cool, and everybody should have a Roth IRA. Slide 10. But a Roth IRA is not for everyone. Well, Payana, you just told me that everyone should have a Roth. Yes, yes, you can do it. You just have to learn how to navigate the paperwork. And folks, I help people do this. It's legal. It's bizarre. There are limitations on the Roth IRA contributions. So as of 2020, only single taxpayers with an adjusted gross income of $124,000 or less and married couples with an adjusted gross income of $196,000 or less can fully contribute to a Roth IRA. And if you don't qualify, congratulations. I mean, you're doing pretty well. $124,000 for single, $196,000 for married. You're doing okay. But you can still contribute to the Roth IRA anyway, huh? Well, if you find, or if you know, that you've made over the limit, what you do is you recharacterize the contributions into a traditional IRA, which does not have the same limitations before you file your taxes. Actually, you have until I think October of 2020, right? You have until 6 months after the time that you do your taxes. But still, you should do it before you file your taxes. Then what you do the next day, or you turn it in the same time, you convert the traditional IRA back into the Roth IRA. Well, I've done it. You fill out the paperwork, and the exact day you put it all in, it takes 2 days for it to happen, right? It takes two transactions. But you tell the IRS that I'm changing my contributions to the Roth IRA into the traditional IRA, which doesn't have the same limitation on contributions. And then you convert the traditional IRA immediately into a Roth. Who voted for these bozos? Oh yeah, we did. Ugh. Is the tax law broken? Is the tax system broken? Oh yes. Can we ever agree on how to fix it? Oh no. All right. So in 2020, the contribution limits for the IRA, traditional IRA, and Roth IRA are $6,000, and once you hit age 50, then you can put in an extra $1,000. So contributions are limited to the lesser of your gross salary or the yearly maximum contribution. If you make at least $6,000, you have until April 15th of 2021 to put the maximum into the IRA or Roth IRA. Your spouse is also eligible for contributions even if she or he does not work. The contributions limits will rise, are rising with inflation, as we'll see on the next slide. So even if your spouse doesn't work, as long as you made, say, $12,000, you could put $6,000 for you and $6,000 for your spouse. Of course, if your spouse works, the same limit applies to them, $6,000. But of course, if you make more than that, don't worry about it. So, and that, you know, that's a lot of money, folks. Most people are not going to put that much money away. But if you can, great, especially when you're younger, because remember, that's all going to grow tax-free, assuming you wait until 59 and a half. I'm a big fan of the Roth IRA. Now, let's take a look at the contribution limits for the 401k 403b and the Roth 401k, Roth 403b. See, they're higher. So what we see is inflation. I think the last time the Roth was changed was about 4 or 5 years ago. But notice that every year, pretty much the last few years, the 401k limits have been going up. In 2020, 19,500. And once you hit age 50, you get to add a catch-up. They call it the catch-up allowance. So contributions again are limited to the lesser of your gross salary, or the maximum yearly contribution. In other words, folks, if you make $19,500, you could put the entire amount into a 401k, 403b, 457. As noted, these amounts are now indexed to inflation and go up over time. And there's a loophole in the law that allows the. I thought they would have gotten rid of this a long time ago, but it happened in 2002. Loophole in the law that allows those of us in the public sector to contribute twice, $19,500 into a 401k, 403b, and a 457. And if you're 50 or over, that's $26,000 times two. So let's say you're married. You're both married, of course. You're married to one another, and you both make pretty decent salaries. You can live off the one salary, and especially if you're younger, folks, this is unreal. Say you're in your late 20s, you both have a pretty good job. Take the $19,500 from one of your paychecks, put it into the 401k, and then live off the other salary. And oh my goodness, you do that for 5 years and put it into a prudent long-term investment with an eye toward long-term growth. You'll never have to put another dime away in retirement. And I've had a couple of different students who didn't believe me. I said, "Come over to my office. We'll do the hypothetical illustrations." Right? You saw them in the various chapters, and they both their eyes got wide open because they both were working. Both students were working and had spouses, and their spouses were working. So I don't know if they ever did it or not, but I sure hope they did. It's an eye-opening experience, given the power of compounded rate of return over longer-term periods. Very, very cool. Okay? So contact me if you'd like to see any of those illustrations. All right? Yeah, of course. Very, very cool. Now, some people might say, well, I don't trust my spouse. What if we get divorced? This is true for any qualified account, IRA, traditional IRA, Roth, 401k, 403b. If you do separate, if you do divorce, then the divorce court is going to decide what happens. Often, the retirement accounts are split, so they don't get to just run away. But you don't want to get divorced, folks. It's a horrible situation. Sometimes it's necessary, but it's one of the worst things that can happen to you financially. The statistic is more than half of women and children 1 year after divorce are living at or below the poverty level. So don't get divorced. Remember, the most important financial decision you will ever make is who you marry. Slide 13. Now, this is cool, folks, especially if you're in the lower, economic income level. But I don't think these levels are that low. You know, $65,000 for a married couple, that's not that low. But the IRS, the Congress, will give you a tax credit for putting $50 a month into your Roth IRA. You put $50 a month, that's $600 a year, they might give you $300 back. So it's a maximum of $2,000, but still, that's pretty darn good. And tax credit is a very cool thing. Dollar for dollar reduction of your income taxes. So if you do your own taxes, don't forget this. If you have someone do them for you, make sure to remind them you put money into a 401k, a Roth IRA, and tax programs like TurboTax handle these situations very well. So they're not going to call you up if you don't take advantage of them and then say, they're not, IRS is not going to call you up and say, hey, Fred, yeah, looks like you could take advantage of the tax credit. No, you have to do it yourself. Slide 14. We made mention of the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b. If your employer offers this option, you are able to place after-tax dollars into your 401k, 403b, just like the Roth IRA. Now, the employer matches will continue to be pre-tax contributions. So it gets a little funky here. You have to remember, you have to keep track of how much is post-tax, after-tax, and how much is pre-tax. And unlike the Roth IRA, contributions are not able to be withdrawn without the penalty or taxes until retirement. This is a great option for those who don't need the tax break now. But unless your employer offers those wonderful matching contributions, I prefer the Roth IRA, simply because it makes life easier. The IRS expects you to remember how much is after tax and how much is before tax. And so they call it the basis, which is a dumb name, but that's what they call it, the basis. And it can be a bit of an accounting. It's not a nightmare, but it's another one of those little stones in your shoe that you have to be reminded of every time you do your taxes. So it's up to you whether you want to do that. But if you're in the lower tax bracket and they match, boy, it's a winner, in my humble opinion. Okay, we mentioned a third type of retirement account. An annuity, slide number 15. An annuity is a life insurance product designed to provide a guaranteed income. Annuity options includes income for a set number of years, the guaranteed payout, 10, 20, 30 years. For as long as you live, the life income option, which is very popular to people, it sounds enticing. Or for as long as you and your spouse or other dependent lives, if he or she outlives you. The amount you get is based on your age, which of the above options you pick, how much you've contributed, and how well your annuity investments have performed over time. You can choose a fixed annuity, which essentially invests in bonds, fixed income, or variable annuities, which invest in mutual funds, which can be bonds or stocks or other types of mutual funds. Okay, so it sounds like a great deal, right? The insurance company is going to guarantee to pay me a certain amount for the rest of my life. Yeah. What are the advantages and disadvantages? Well, the cool thing is that you can fund it with retirement account dollars or after-tax dollars. So unlike the Roth, the 401k, the 403b, there's no limit on how much you can put into an annuity. The interest earned is tax deferred, like the traditional IRA and the 401k. And you pay taxes on any pre-tax annuity contributions and all tax-deferred earnings as you withdraw them in retirement. And as with other retirement plans, when you retire, you will likely be in a lower tax bracket. If you're not, congratulations. What's the downside? Oh, the fees are outrageous. The fees are outrageous. The annuity company usually takes at least 1.5% to 3% every year on top of any mutual fund fees if it's in a variable annuity. But I'll tell you, if you're an agent, if you're a life insurance agent, and you can sell these things because you have no ethics. I'm sorry, if you have, you are convinced yourself that these are in the best interest of their clients, they're not. Then you can make a ton of money because these things pay a tremendous commission. If you don't believe me, go to the website and take a look at what's in it for the annuity salesperson, not the clients. They'll send you on a all expense paid cruise. Well, maybe not now, but they'll shower you with love and attention and money. Because the insurance companies are just licking their chops with these things. The fees are outrageous. And I get into some pretty heated discussions with other salespeople, other representatives, whatever you want to call us, stockbrokers. A couple of guys were about ready to swing punches at me because I think these things are horrible. But everyone's different. You know, everyone's different. And there are some situations where it might make sense, but they're few and far between. People say, "Well, I like that life income and I like giving life income option." So I sit them down and I show them the stuff we showed you in Chapter 11, where bonds and retirement, stocks and bonds and retirements, balance fund and retirement, and compare it to what the life insurance company is offering them. And invariably, it just destroys what the life insurance company is offering them. It just destroys them. And they say, "Well, what happens if my accounts go to zero?" Well, if you wind up losing all your money because the economy has fallen into the worst depression the world has ever seen, and there's no food at the Vons, no gas at the Chevron station, no clothes at the Gap, the cell phones aren't working, the SDG&E is not pumping out electricity or natural gas, and the trash isn't being picked up, and the hospitals, the schools, the banks, the fire departments, the police departments are all shuttered. Yeah, failure is not an option, dear students. Failure is not an option, and we're going to succeed, in my humble opinion. And if we don't, I'll meet you at the beach, bring the vodka and the marshmallows, and we'll watch the world burn. So stay away from annuities. And really, if you want to get, you know, find a good salesperson, insurance agent who you trust, have them show you their best illustration, and then bring it to me, and I'll show you how we'll destroy it by simply putting the money into a balance fund, a well-run, you know, decently run balance fund. Enough said. And that is our discussion of account types. Remember that there are regular accounts where you pay taxes every year, and it doesn't matter how much money you have, what type of investments you want to do, anything's available. And then there are the pre-tax contribution retirement accounts and the post-tax contribution retirement accounts. Tax break now, tax break later, and then the annuities, which have sort of a combination of pre and post-tax, but have extremely high fees. Thank you very much, dear students. We are so proud of you. You've made it this far to the end of the semester. We just can't express our thanks for you sticking with us this far. We want you to be awesome.